Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cinematic Schematic, the official podcast at cinemetropolis.com, your home to thoughtful conversations on film. I'm your host, Caleb Masters, and today we're doing a little bit of a cool little bonus-ode, a little bonus episode covering a few recap of South by Southwest. Now, I was not at South by Southwest this year, sadly. I had to miss this year. It's an incredible festival, probably one of my favorite festivals of all time that I love to go down for when I can. I think I've been like four times now. Sadly, 2024 was not a year I was down there. However, I'm privileged to have some wonderful friends and colleagues who did in fact attend, including the Dead Center crew. Now, this is the same Dead Center crew who joined us for our Love Lies Bleeding episode. So we'll go around the table, do some introductions, and then just talk a little bit about their experience at the festival, as well as maybe some films to keep their eyes on. We, the listeners, should keep our eyes on for the future. So first up, my co-host. He missed the Oscars for South by.
Oh, man.
But he was at South by Southwest, so it's the correct place to be. LaRon Chapman, my co-host, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me, yeah.
You are appropriately dressed in South by Southwest attire. Listeners can't see
it. I'm currently rocking my merch from there. I figure I should get some use of this very overpriced merch, but it's fun. It's fun. Look, they had a unicorn.
Oh yes.
Themed South by Southwest shirt, and I figured like, okay, well they're clearly doing this for me now, so I have to buy it. So, absolutely.
As an X-Men fan, this is, you know, the Apocalypse has the four horsemen, and they all look like little robots in the '90s cartoon. That's what that.
Yes, looks like. It's very vintage.
Yeah, I love it. Also, super excited to be rejoined by Sunrise Tipicani, the director of programming at Dead Center. Sunrise, welcome back.
Thanks. Yeah, it's fun, and I'm glad to be able to talk about South by. It was fun, and it's fun to be here. And I hope we can talk about movies.
I'm living vicariously through you guys, is what I'm trying to get at.
That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
And last but certainly not least, excited to be rejoined by Cam Chavez Rojas, Dead Center Shorts programmer. Cam, welcome back.
Hi. Thank you for having us. It's great to talk about South by. It feels like it's a marathon and then it's gone. And then,
yep.
So it's good to have someone to talk about it with.
Process and recover with it.
Yes.
It's true though, because if you haven't been to South by Southwest, there's a lot of stuff going on. So you do, much like training in an athletic sport, you have to really be intentional about your schedule. Mm-hmm. And you have to have a backup plan if the thing you want to see doesn't work out. You actually need to have a second backup if that doesn't work out. Yeah. And you have to be ready to be fluid at all times, you know, to actually get into the movie, get the most out of your trip down there.
Absolutely. And the beauty about that, even with all those conflicts that you just mentioned, is that there is more to do than there is time to do it.
Ow.
So if you do lose out on something, catching something, there's always something else you can fall onto that will be equally valuable. So
absolutely. I think that's well said. Well, let's just kick things off asking, what was you guys' experience like this year in terms of, obviously, we'll talk about the movies here in a moment, but the festival's got a unique vibe. We're still kind of in this weird post-pandemic recovery. I went last year and it seemed like it was really had rebuilt the strength of the previous festivals, but not quite like 2019 levels. What was your experience? And I'll start with you, Sunrise.
Yeah, so compared to last year, it did feel like there were more people than there were in the past year. And then there was more later programming. I do remember last year that some film participants were saying that there was just not enough programming going later into the evening.
Mm.
And it felt like they rectified it this year. There were a lot more works playing in later slots toward the end of the evening. So you could probably get in like four, maybe five if you time it right. Whereas last year it felt like you could get maybe four at the max. And then there were definitely not as many late showings. And so also related to that is like the really kind of like pushing the boundaries of genre work was not as present last year as it was this year. So it felt like it was really made for the audience that's really out to like explore something really exciting and really adrenaline pushing and really like something to talk about. So that was great. And then just I was able to see a lot of the XR, what they call XR, the experience work, and the VR and AR. And they really expanded that from last year. And just every year, it feels like that's something that's growing and they're really nurturing that really well, both in terms of like a primary room where you can kind of see maybe like close to 20 works. And then every day they have a large room available to works that are like expansive in their spatial dimensions for the experience. And I think those are really a place for the future of just cinema in general. And it's great to see that it's really, there's a returning audience and there's works that are continuing in long form. Like there was a sequel that came last year, a couple of years ago. And so it feels like there's enough for people to return to. And that was great. And I'll also say that maybe this is just me, but it feels like South By is becoming sort of a place for a reunion for me, where I feel like I'm running into a lot of people, particularly like, you know, Dead Center alumni or just friends of mine in the past or friends that are in Austin. And it feels like there's this nice sort of like get together and this sort of like catch up. What have you been up to? What are you up to next? And just feels like a really great energy that kind of doesn't exist in the same way at Sundance. Everybody's like out to like get the film before anybody else. And they're kind of maybe hush hush about sort of like what they're thinking. And it's more maybe industry than like audience. And if you're really into audience experience for a festival, seems like South By was really the place to be this year. So that was great.
It's got a lot more of the laid back Texas party energy that you would think, you know, in terms of like the audience, everyone's just there to have a good time. Yeah, they're there to watch movies, review movies and do the work, but people are just really relaxed and partying. I mean, there's booze and free stuff everywhere. Yes,
that's the perk, for sure.
Yeah. Cam, how was your experience?
It was good. I mean, it, you know, as a shorts programmer, you know, usually we've been there for a lot longer, but this time we were just like busted out on a weekend. So that meant we were mostly in one theater for the whole time, the Rollins. So we didn't really get to go to Alamo or anything. And thankfully, our Airbnb was only like 10 minutes away. So we
that's very nice.
So we were walking. And I mean, it was a great exercise before, you know, sitting down. But no, I had a really good time. I think this year, the short filmmakers had a lot more promotional items that they were handing out. And there was more enthusiasm while waiting in line than I saw last year. Like just more like props, more fun, exciting ways for them to promote their short film. So it's always really fun to see some shorts as well that have submitted to us already that we're thinking about. So I always come in with that mindset of like, okay, we already saw it. I didn't know how to feel about it. And then I get there and I'm like, it's perfect. Or maybe not this time. Or the sound is, you know, so that's always the best part. And yeah, but it was like a marathon. Walked 5 miles every day and then got to watch films. And the filmmakers were really cool people. I mean, that's the best part, is really getting to connect with people. The Austin Film Society, we got a chance to go to their brunch, which was super fun. And I think that's where Sunrise and some people reconnected with a lot of Dead Center alum or just people from Oklahoma. So it was cool to have more like a community feel this time around.
It was always fun whenever I go down. I'm not with Dead Center anyway, but I literally ran into Dead Center someone from you guys' crew every year. It was always fun. It's like, if you go to one of the after parties or something, it's like, oh yeah, hey, what's up? Lance, haven't seen you in like 6 months. Okay. LaRon Chapman, how was your Dead Center experience?
Yeah, it's great. This is, I think, the third time I've gone to South By. And this was what really stood out to me again is, like you mentioned, that audience reaction to things. It really does elevate the experience. You know, when you're in the Paramount Theater, it doesn't even matter if the movie is great, because there's a couple movies I've seen in the Paramount Theater later at home, and I'm like, you know what? I think it was the audience. You know, like, but it does like elevate just that communal experience of being in a theater, being in, you know, very enthusiastic about seeing something, and it just gets you so jazzed up and puts you in a really great state of mind. And it's really good for the filmmakers, particularly the people who worked on it, you know, to see that kind of reaction to their work. And so I had a nice hybrid of seeing some of the premieres and then obviously being there for a very intended purpose. You know, with Dead Center, you know, we're going to these different, as Dead Center programmer, we're going to these festivals to kind of get a sense for what's working. You know what I mean? Like what are people responding to? Like what kind of, films are people watching? Are they interested? What kind of themes are we seeing trends with, you know? And as Cam mentioned, like if there are films that have already submitted to us and maybe we like them in the comfort of our home, it's really important to kind of see it with an audience to kind of see like this definitely lands. And we did that with a couple of them that just solidified a couple of choices that are down the pipeline. But so that was something that was really unique. And yeah, it was just, it was a good time. It was a good, I love that city. You know, I love that. I love that the creative space there. It doesn't feel like Texas. It feels like its own island, you know, of creatives on one in one space, you know. And so it was a good time. Yeah.
I love it. And the magical atmosphere of watching a world premiere in the Paramount, I mean, really any theater. But like, for example, it's a huge difference because the thing I have to remind listeners who've never been to a film festival like this before, there's way more people who want to be in that theater than people who have tickets generally.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people who wait in line for 2 hours sometimes and might not get in, right? Like, I waited in line for 3 hours for Ready Player One and like was two people away and didn't get in.
Oh, no.
It was heartbreaking. But that's what I'm saying though. So everyone who, what that means though, is everyone who is in those seats really wants to be there.
Yeah.
And they are ready to have a good time. And so that sort of having that focused group of people in a room like that, when it plays, the audience really feeds off each other. And some pretty magical, I would say, almost like, really, you know, I know it's not church necessarily, but it's got that spiritual energy where everyone's kind of feeding off of one another. People are laughing, clapping. I saw a Quiet Place there. The gasping was big, you know. So it is a really unique experience when you can be in those places and see how the audience is reacting to films like you were just describing there, LaRon. Now, in terms of the movies, was there anything in particular that caught your interest that you think listeners might want to keep on their radar? And I'll throw it back to you, LaRon.
In terms of the premieres, like one of the ones I did see was Sing Sing. The director's name is escaping me, but the Coleman Domingo film, it's based on a true story. He's a man who's accused of a crime he didn't commit, but he's in prison, and it's dealing with all of these inmates who, you know, typically when we examine the prison system and the people inhabiting it, like, we don't really flesh them out as the human beings that they are. And I think what was really fascinating about this is, which I didn't know until the film was over, was that all of the actors that we are getting to know were former inmates at this particular space. And so they're now playing themselves in the movie. And so that was really cool because it added this level of authenticity to the performances that I felt, but didn't realize that's why it was there. You know, like they actually were these people. And it's a very moving, character driven, drama that I think is going to be a huge crowd pleaser for a lot of people coming in the coming year. And I think Coleman Domingo, who got nominated for Rustin, a film I didn't love, but I loved him in it. I love his performance in this more, and I love the movie. So I think you might actually see him in the conversation again next year at the Oscars. But in terms of, like some of the shorts programs that we saw, there was one film that we saw during the narrative block shorts called Hello Stranger that I really enjoyed. And it's dealing with the trans experience of a trans woman. But what I loved the most about it was a doc short.
Yeah, but there's a lot of narrative
elements to it
in documentaries that we've been seeing a lot more.
Yeah, something that's interesting about we saw a whole shorts block of documentaries, and they felt more like films, like they felt like narratives. And it's like there's doc elements in it, like they've infused, like obviously the way they're shot and everything, but the way they unfold, like some of them felt like this feels like a crime thriller. This is really cool the way that this is a real person and talking about what's happening, but the way it's being employed is very, very, you know.
Well, yeah, we talked about the pickpocket documentary, the shot player.
Yeah.
And that one it opened up the docs, right? But it is filmed like a 70s crime thriller. And the voiceover is this man who is like a legend in the pickpocket underground world of New York City. So him talking about how he does it, his process is just filmed recreation, right? Kind of like true crime where they recreate something. It's just him pickpocketing people on the subway. And then him talking about the guilt and the why and the addiction and the thrill. But it could have gone further. But visually, it was one that he had a great cinematographer. But then we were trying to figure out, does that count as a documentary? Or how do we...
It was a real person, a real thing, a real action.
Yes.
But it's just...
But did they dramatize the pickpocketing type stuff?
Yeah, but it doesn't feel that way. But you realize at the end, I mean, clearly they wouldn't be filming the crime. In the real time, they'd see cameras there. It wouldn't work that way. But it the way it has a naturalistic feel to it. But it's just with the score too is so underscored with just like something very like, I don't want to say it was synthy kind of,
but kind of good times kind of vibe.
Yeah, very gritty, you know what I mean? Like, but interesting there. And just one more thing about Hello Stranger, it's just dealing, no, you're fine. No, it's dealing with like, again, the trans experience, but it's like this character is able to go through all the little nuances of what happens to the body during that process of transition. But there was one thing that they weren't able to get over, and it was the vocalization. They couldn't get that. The voice is still very masculine presenting. Mm-hmm. And so it's interestingly, you know, dealing with like a movie we were just talking about, Love Lies Bleeding. It's like this idea of masculinity and femininity and how everywhere seen, you would think it was a woman, you know, you would see a woman, but the voice is challenging that notion. And then it's that character reconciling with the fact that I can still be this. There's this one thing that's keeping me from it. But again, these things that we attribute to masculinity and femininity and what makes it that or not that. And so it's their journey to accepting, to embrace all these different elements of themselves and still feel, you know, as one thing. And I thought that was just a really interesting take on it. And it's also a documentary just kind of chronicling that process. And so I found that really interesting, called Hello Stranger.
So then the ones I've heard so far are Hello Stranger.
And Sing Sing.
And Sing Sing. And then you mentioned
Shot Player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to think. There were just so many that I think mostly I appreciated the representation. I really vibed with these Latina filmmakers. They actually had, like, it was called Los Mosquitos, and it was about, you know, just like these girls that are sent from their country here to the U.S. by their parents, and they're taken care of by a family member or someone in their community, but they're essentially alone. And the girl that wrote it, or the filmmaker that wrote it, she brought the real people it was inspired by, Nicole Chi. And she was very interesting because she grew up in Costa Rica.
Oh, wow.
And spoke Spanish, but you wouldn't, you know, and I kind of made that mistake of like, oh, that's cool that you love this community. She's like, well, I grew up in this community. And she brought up the actors in it that are real people that the story is based around, and they didn't speak English. And so she was translating for them during the Q&A. And to me, that just seemed very powerful, you know,
just like authentic, real authentic lifelong connections that she's, yes, really working to tell a story about.
Or, yeah, just bringing like Hispanic people that might not understand this world, and they were obviously very nervous, you know, and just talking about the idea of being like a migrant worker here, or the idea of legalization. There's a lot of pressure in that right now, especially politically, and just the fact that they kind of had a safe space to kind of talk about it without getting too intense, or just getting a platform to kind of just talk about it in a narrative way and like humanizing people,
yeah,
who are going through this. I really loved that, and just meeting other Latina filmmakers and learning from them. A lot of them have to create their own production companies because they can't get their projects off the ground. Yeah. So it's always cool to get a sense of like, this is what I want to be when I grow up. So it's always fun to meet people,
awesome,
like filmmakers like that.
It's within reach. They've done it. You can do it.
Exactly.
You're talented, smart, yeah, hardworking. You know, it's right there.
Yeah.
Sunrise, what are some films you'd like to call out?
Well, just in response to all of these, that some of the thematic things that I was seeing is that there was this documentary called A House Is Not a Disco, directed by Brian J. Smith, and it was kind of looking at a community of what was considered to be a homo-normative community in Fire Islands Pines in upstate New York. And it was also one of these forms of a documentary where it felt like overly attentive in its cinematography and scoring, and it did not feel like it was like a documentary where people go in and they're obtruding and they're sitting people down and getting questions. They felt very integrated, and that's something that also came out in the Q&A, that they made an agenda. The director and the director of photography made this point to not go in without developing a relationship, without feeling like those that are a part of the community are guiding the conversation, and that the questions were not without some sort of guidance from the community. And it felt really interesting. It felt really intimate, and it felt beautiful. But also it was like recognizing where there are elements of the queer community that feel that they are not included in what was intentionally meant to be a utopic environment, but somehow was excluding backgrounds that were maybe not privileged enough to be able to buy a space. And so it's sort of reconciling with those questions. And part of the documentary was not quite sure how to handle that, you know, it sort of went back and forth about how comfortable people were addressing these particular circumstances, and that maybe the ideal is not the ideal anymore. And that was really interesting.
The ideal for who, too, you know?
Right, exactly.
Which, I mean, that was a recurring theme, a lot about privilege. Paris would have talked about this. She can articulate this better, but in the documentary shorts block that we saw, it was a lot to do. It started off with people who had to do certain things like the pickpocket. There were Filipino women in the UK being abused because they came there legally and they have to work as a house cleaning, but then they get abused and they have no rights. So it started off like lower class, working class, and then you get to the quirky rich people with hobbies. So it's about puzzles, like a puzzle palace was insane. They had like 50,000 puzzles in their house. And I mean, like puzzles that you kind of work with, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And not the only puzzle documentary either. Like there was a feature length puzzle documentary too.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on.
No. But yeah, we were just talking about like who has the right to have a hobby or who has a privilege, you know? So there was a lot of short blocks that you could see had to do with like the individual. It starts off with, you know, working class people having to do something to survive and bringing attention to problems that are happening. And then it ends with just quirky rich people who are able to do things, you know, and they have fun with it. And then and it's great. And it ended off in a positive note. But then it's like, huh, like now I got to rethink some things, you know, I don't know.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
How should you feel about their?
Yeah.
Radically different stories, and you can see the values of the different.
And you can
tiers,
tell these, you can see that the filmmakers clearly had an interest in these peculiar people with a peculiar interest that is very niche. And like, hey, what if we just give this its whole platform? But like you said, like in terms of like, because specifically one of the things I do love about Dead Center, and like you said, it's very thematic.
Yeah,
we let the movies that get submitted generate which blocks we make. You know, like by what's resonating, what's the overlap, and I love that aspect of it because it's so impersonal to me when you go to a shorts block. Even with some of these, you're going in blindly. It just says narrative block one. You don't know what that means. You don't know what you're going in for. Do I need to invest 2 hours in this? Whereas with us, we try to at least give you a sense of what you're in store for, and if that interests you, you know you're going there for that reason.
I think it's one of my favorite things about what you guys do. The expectation from the get-go.
And I think it's because that's what we want. You know what I mean? Like, it's what, when we go to a festival, that's what we're looking for, so it helps that, you know, to have a sense, you know, of what you're getting into. And if it's too much for you or not, you know, you can at least make a choice beforehand, you know.
So. For sure. But, we make it easy, you know.
We try.
We definitely make it easier than South by Southwest.
Well, yeah, because like some people just want to watch something uplifting and just, you know, they might not be ready to dive into the deep end of what shorts can offer. And that's perfectly fine. So if you're going to come and support us, there's your block for you. There's, you know, but if you want to experiment, there's also other things there for you. So it's just, we try to make it easy for people. Like, you want to support the arts, you want to support Oklahoma, here's a block for you, or family block, or something kind of easy watching. Obviously, you might still be have some themes or ideas that could be challenging, but nothing that's going to traumatize you.
And if you're here for the trauma and you're here for the gross and the sick and the
depraved,
we got a block for you too. You know, so
yeah.
Love it. Dead Center coming soon, ladies and gentlemen. DeadCenterFilm.org. Sunrise, I'll give you the final word. Anything else you want to hit on in terms of films or programming or the experience?
Two things I want to highlight there from South by Southwest. In the VR section, there was this experience called Soul Paint. And the idea was that you put on a headset, you put on your headphones, and you're given the ability to basically utilize the technology's body mapping circumstance where it's like following your body and you're able to sort of like take this virtual paint palette and virtual paintbrush and you dip it into the palette on your left hand and the brush on your right, and then you paint into a mirrored image of your body. How your body is feeling is sort of like the guidance. So like, how does your body feel in different areas? And so you paint, and there's different sort of like brush strokes and patterns and colors, and you can make all sorts of, you know, virtual three-dimensional shapes, and they stick to your body. So then as you move around, you can kind of see how your body looks in terms of how it feels. And then there's sort of like a documentary element where you're able to record the way that you're thinking about your body and what the colors mean, and then it will play back later. So you kind of go through all of this experience of painting, recording your voice, and then later you hear and see other people's reflections of themselves. So there's really interesting sort of like historical relationship across all these other people in this virtual space. It's
cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. It felt like there's many therapeutic approaches to this technology, and it's not just like fun and games. It feels like it could help communicate. Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. So that was really incredible and very popular. Like the lines were very long for that particular experience.
I'm glad you highlight that just real quickly because firstly, I love that there's a very practical application for how that could be used in a lot of different ways outside of just entertainment. It seemed, and forgive me, you guys will remember the name of the, there was the virtual experience that you guys had at Dead Center last year was the body dysmorphia. I'm totally drawing a blank on the film, but it was.
It won an award, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
It was very impressive, but that was another experience where I'm watching it and it felt like the empathy machine analogy where it's like, yeah, this is what people who experience this feel like in the moment.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just want to pause and I like that you called that out, Sunrise, because there's a very practical application, I think.
Yeah, a lot of utility for sure.
And there's a virtual, like the special VR, AR type experiences that South by Southwest and Dead Center offer.
Yeah. And that was Body of Mine. Just
Body of Mine.
So
Body of Mine.
From last year. Yeah. Best virtual reality film. So yeah, that was really incredible. And, you know, there's a lot of really amazing things going on in VR, just in terms of the telling space, but telling story space that's there. But one that's very conventional, I think everybody will probably anticipate in terms of like the fact that it's just a single channel feature film to move away from virtual, but Y2K, directed by Tulsa's own Kyle Mooney.
Real?
Yeah.
Okay. I was hearing a lot of crazy buzz about that. That's an Oklahoma filmmaker?
Yeah. Kyle Mooney. Yes. Oh, absolutely. It was an SNL. Yes, absolutely. It was in Brigsby Bear. Yeah. Returns with a sophomore feature.
We were both
feature.
There opening night. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Not opening night. Now.
How many hours did you wait? I have to know.
I waited. So here's my thing. I know. I'm a season festival goer. I know if I want to get into it, I got to get there early. People are going to think you're insane. And why are you going there 2.5 hours early? I was like, because I want to get in.
Yep.
And they're like, you're going to wait that long? We can get there an hour before. I was like, yeah, you can try it. And then
no,
you won't get in. And so that was when I waited at least 2 hours for. And because it was the Paramount, it really does depend on the venue too. Like you wait longer in if you go to the smaller venues, then you know, you might want to get there even earlier. But the Paramount does hosts like what about 1,000?
It's close to. I feel like it's 700 or something.
Okay,
yeah, it's so close to 1,000.
It's a pretty large theater.
It's very large.
Most people get into that one.
Yeah,
most people.
I think it's such a beautiful theater. Sorry,
it is. It's really ornate. It has that old timey vibe that I love. And but we saw Y2K there, and that was one I knew nothing about going into it, but I can assume from the title that it was going to be dealing with, you know, that period of time. And you know, what is it? Rachel Zegler is one of the leads in it. The other two, I'm blocking. But in general, like if you were a tween during those years, which I was, during that little, like we had all these philosophies and conspiracy theories about what was going to happen. You know, many things that haven't come to fruition. But this movie imagines the worst case scenario should all of those things happen at once in one time, AI, everything. But, you know, I say maybe it did happen. It just didn't happen on that date because AI is starting to take over now. But that being said, it's a very comedic, I wouldn't call it horror, but kind of a campy, bloody romp of sorts. Like a teen film that has definite, like, I mean, there's gore in it. Let's just put it that way. But it's also, it imagines if you are nostalgic for the early aughts and the music of that time and the references of that time and the clothing of that time, then it will definitely be something for you. I don't know who it's for outside of that, because it is very...
We're millennials, Laron. It's for us now.
It's definitely abbreviating like a specific
I don't know period. About that. I mean, like, there was somebody who was probably a millennial sitting next to me on my right, and they were not getting a lot of the references.
Oh.
And a lot of the front audience was getting a lot of those references, like deep cuts about, like, you know, whatever was popular at the particular time, including, like, you know, sounds and chimes and all that. But
I don't want to spoil the really fun. I won't.
Don't spoil the
very.
Ron, you can't. Don't spoil.
Okay, well, gone.
You didn't realize. Have I gone too far?
From the Brigsby Bear, Kyle Mooney, until just now. Don't ruin this for me.
Okay. I've gone too far. But you're in for a treat if you liked a certain genre of music during that period of time.
It is sort of a love letter to that particular time, just in terms of music. And even like the ultimate message in the end of the movie are related to music and how it's really important in our lives, despite its intertwined nature with technology today. It feels like it's really praise for things that maybe have gone overlooked since that period of time.
It spoke to me being of that period and being that age during that period, because you could even tell from the young cast that was in it, they clearly were born 2007 or beyond. And so,
I mean, yeah, Rachel's.
So they really can't know what this was like. You know what I mean? Like, so that's the one aspect of it that I do think it's only going to have so much traction with so many people. But
I think there is a fascination from shorts I've seen. There is a fascination with late 90s, early 2000s that even Gen Z is interested in, with fashion and music and stuff. So I think, you know, maybe they don't get it, but they're going to watch it. And they're going to pick up on the references, or they're going to look up the music.
Yeah.
So I think it's an interesting way of like introducing
that period.
Yeah. Because there is a fascination with it. Like, I'm on TikTok way too much. And there is, you know, an obsession with finding movies from the past and discovery and the fashion and all of that. So I think it is there. I think there's an audience there.
Yeah. I think, I mean, the way you're describing it makes me feel like it functions like the Blues Brothers. When I was younger, I was like, oh, what are all these cool musicians? And it does feel like it's also a celebration of like the contemporary actors. It feels like Ziegler is somebody that was really, if you've been following her, she's obviously a strong actor, but it felt like it was doing a lot of things to remind us that she's funny as well as like has dramatic chops or like the ability to sing.
Yeah.
And that was really strong. And then just Jaden Martell and Julian Dennison, I feel like those are actors that I think are rising in various ways. And it was sort of like giving them a lot of things to do and really making us value them as young people that are going to replace this past, but.
And I think he had a film with Nicolas Cage too at the festival.
He did, yeah.
The other lead.
Jaden Martell.
Yeah, Jaden Martell. Yeah.
What was the Nick Cage movie? Nick Cage has one there every year.
Arcadian, which was a serious film.
Yeah.
A serious sort of like end of the world scenario.
Yeah.
Nick Cage, serious end of the world. Yeah. Sign me up.
With bullets, I think.
No, I didn't get a chance to see all of them, but I will say that the reviews from the reception from the audience of South by Southwest, there was obviously Monkey Man was there, Roadhouse opening night. There was Immaculate with Sydney Sweeney.
Fall Guy.
And that was one of the longest lines. I think people who were there 4 hours ahead didn't get in.
Yikes.
Well, and they came in on a very, I don't know if you saw the clips of Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt. They came in on a big stunt truck down Congress, and people were, so that I already know that I would have loved to have seen that
one. It's like a circus, but also in the best way possible.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, last question. We're way longer than I thought this was going to be, of course. You know, how many of those actors really are like South by Southwest Academy Awards 1 weekend earlier, just 1 weekend earlier.
Yeah.
Put the awards back on the old schedule. Many actors had to go from LA to Austin the very next day. It was crazy. I didn't even realize Nick Cage was there. That's another one. It's like
Coleman Domingo. Didn't you say he?
Yeah. In and out. Boom. Bam. Boom. Yeah. I got to be. It's like, aren't you like nominated for an Oscar and you got to be there in Hollywood tomorrow? Yeah. It's like, so yeah. It's bad coordinating. This should definitely happen before or after Academy.
This didn't used to be this way. It wasn't. Yeah. Go back to the end of February or something, or a different weekend in March.
Yeah.
All right, listeners. Well, hey, that's all we have time for today. Laurent, Cam, Sunrise, thank you guys so much for giving our listeners this little bonus treat. Listeners, you've got a little bit of homework. Follow up on all these movies. Check them out. And if you're on Letterboxd, add them to your watch list. And, of course, keep your eyes peeled to deadcenterfilm.org for more. Thank you so much for joining us, everyone. Catch you again next time.